Good morning, friends. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. And I'm happy to have with us in the studio Kevin Clark, who's the commanding officer over at the United States Coast Guard Motor Lifeboat School. Thanks for being with us, Kevin.
Thanks for having me in, Jim. I appreciate it.
Motor Lifeboat School. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a 27-year veteran of the Coast Guard, originally from Texas. About half of my career on the Oregon and Washington coast, and of that, 9 years so far at the National Motor Lifeboat School. I was an instructor there from 1993 to 97, returned in 2001 as the executive petty officer, second in command, and senior instructor, and was there at the school then to 2006. And then 2 weeks ago, I took over command from Chief Warrant Officer Chris Masney and am now the new commanding officer. A dream come true for me.
Cool. So, do you live over in El Waco?
I actually do. Live up in Ocean Park right now, but my family, my wife and youngest son, are in Silverdale, Washington, where we plan to retire after my career is over, and I'm done at the lifeboat school and after this 3-year period.
So this 3-year shot then is your last.
It is it for me. It'll take me to 30 years and unfortunately mandatory retirement. So, but it's been a great career for you. At 30 years it is, yes.
Oh, okay. So you actually take these motor lifeboats out in pretty serious conditions.
We do, depending on the type of course that we're running. As a matter of fact, we have a 47-foot motor lifeboat introductory course that we're conducting right now. And in fact, when I left to come over to the station this morning, our boats were getting ready to get underway to take some more novice operators out on the bar to do some towing approaches and some other training. So we do offer a variety of classes, really 5 core courses that the school puts on. The one I just mentioned, the introductory course, is for kind of the beginning motor lifeboat operator. Our second course, the next level up from that, is the motor lifeboat heavy weather course. We teach some similar curriculum in that. Heavy weather search and rescue, towing, personal water recovery, piloting and navigation, just like we do in the course we've got going on today, but it's amped up a little bit. In other words, we expose the students to more serious conditions on the bar. So that's the motor lifeboat heavy weather course. We also have a response boat medium heavy weather course that we just started last year and will be continuing into the next few years as that platform is brought into use at motor lifeboat stations around the country. And then our probably the most dangerous, I guess you would say, or the one of the most challenging courses that we put on is the surfman course. That's a 4-week course that we do in the middle of winter. Our course this year will start in January and end up in finish in February, and that's a 4-week course that we put on for surfmen or prospective surfmen from around the Coast Guard and from surf stations around the Coast Guard, and that is our most challenging. We almost solely operate in surf conditions on the Columbia River bar, all the way up to North Head along Benson Beach and in areas near Clatsop Spit and Peacock Spit.
Now, are there conditions that occur on the bar that actually preclude you from going out? I mean, you decide, boy, it's really crappy out there. Let's stay home.
Well, the nice thing about the Columbia River bar, an estuary, is that it is such a large area. It gives us the opportunity to kind of pick and choose where we want to train, what we want to expose the students to on any given day. But there are days when wind limitations for the boats are exceeded, or the capability of the student themselves is exceeded, and we'll keep them back in the classroom, and we'll continue some classroom study or something along those lines. Days are few and far between, though.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting at, Kevin, is that, you know, if you're actually out doing a rescue and somebody's in real trouble, are there conditions that you just have to say, tough luck, we can't do it?
That may be the case with some of the stations that actually operate. Now, we're a training command, but speaking to that issue, that the Oregon and Washington coast is notorious for, among seafarers, for the treacherous seas, and especially on the Columbia River Bar.
The graveyard of the Pacific.
Exactly. And there are areas on the bar, in particular Peacock Spit, which is can be very, very dangerous. So, you know, I'm speaking more towards what Coast Guard Station Cape Disappointment would do, but I know that, you know, the Coast Guard takes every effort to effect a rescue, and that may mean that we go out, you know, in those conditions, try to get as close to effecting that rescue as we possibly can without endangering our crews too much. It's always risky when you go out in severe weather, but, you know, sometimes we have to take a look at our crews to make sure that, you know, they're capable of going into those conditions, and make sure that we take into consideration the risk that we're putting them at when they go out in those kind of conditions.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about the actual vessel that you use.
Well, we train on two different platforms right now. The 47-foot motor lifeboat has been around since the late 1990s, and it replaced the 44-foot motor lifeboat, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, that was run out of here for several years. In fact, the 44-300 over at the Columbia Maritime Museum was the prototype 44-footer, and when retired, obviously, we moved it over to the museum there. The 47-footer is capable of operating in conditions, weather conditions, 30-foot seas, 20-foot surf, and up to 50-knot winds. So it's a very capable platform in the hands of a skilled operator.
But since you're actually training people, that to me implies that you have a history of doing this kind of stuff, and now you've moved to the training section. Is that right?
You mean as far as my personal experience?
Yeah.
I started off at Coast Guard Station Umpqua River down in Winchester Bay on the Oregon coast here, and was there for 4 years as a junior boat operator. I started off as a third-class petty officer in their training program to learn how to operate 44-foot motor lifeboats in the surf. Went through that program there, certified, and then sought you know, the opportunity to come up to the school and be an instructor, and I was lucky enough to be given that opportunity. So in 1993 I transferred to Umpqua River up to the National Motor Lifeboat School as an instructor, and I spent 4 years there training, and that's kind of how that's how we come up to acquire our instructors from motor lifeboat stations up and down the Oregon, Washington, California coast, and then on the East Coast. So there's 20 surf stations around the Coast Guard, and that's really where our pool of instructors are drawn from. In fact, this class we just started, I asked the senior instructor to give me a number, you know, really how many years of experience does the staff that we currently have at the lifeboat school have in motor lifeboat operations? And pretty impressive, almost 170 years of motor lifeboat operations experience in that instructor staff over there. So the students are very fortunate to have that kind of expertise training them.
Yeah, I can understand that. But getting back to the vessel, I was a little bit curious about the construction of the thing. I mean, diesel engines generally aren't designed to run upside down. So what kind of measures are taken in the construction of these vessels that allow them to operate in those conditions?
Well, the fuel tank itself has a baffle system inside of it, so that if the boat is inverted, that baffle system will hold enough fuel. So as the boat's upside down, the engines will continue to run, and then once it rewrites, of course, you know, the fuel pickup is able to take that diesel fuel back and keep the engines running. So the boat's been designed to be able to roll 360 degrees, has a riding period of around 8 to 15 seconds, obviously depending on the number of people you have on board and the conditions you're operating in. So the engineers that designed the boat made sure that it was capable of doing its job and then bringing the crews back safely.
We hope.
Yes.
You know, I'm curious about, it seems to me like that kind of work would be physically demanding. Do you have any kind of physical training program in place for the students, and maybe you could describe it?
Well, we all Coast Guard boat crews, whether it be a coxswain or an engineer or crew member, are required to maintain a physical fitness program. So we offer at the school, and it's really, you know, pretty much nationwide, the Coast Guard Commandant has directed all boat crew or boat stations to implement a training program or a physical training program where we give our crews 180 minutes at a minimum, 180 minutes a week. So really 1 hour a day, 3 days a week at least, for them to maintain their physical fitness. And that is crucial, especially when you're operating in conditions like we operate in. You know, we really want to make sure that knees and lower back and you know, musculoskeletal issues are avoided if at all possible. And the best way to do that, obviously, is to train and keep yourself in good physical condition. So there's a lot of emphasis put on that in the Coast Guard today.
So your school is actually the national school for, is that correct? So
that's correct.
You train operators for all over the Coast Guard.
All over the, that operate motor lifeboats, right, at stations throughout the country. In fact, the school started in 1968 after the 44-foot motor lifeboat had been out for several years. The operators came to find out that the boat was capable of actually taking a lot more abuse than the operators were. And so in 1968, the Coast Guard District 13 authorized the Coast Guard Station Cape Disappointment to bring in more seasoned operators from around the Oregon and Washington coast to come in and put a school together. And at that time, it wasn't a national school. It was more of a regional school. Over the next 10 or so years, they managed to get a curriculum developed based on the experience of those operators that were brought in from around the 13th district. And in 1980, the school went national, was authorized by the Commandant of the Coast Guard to actually get boats permanently assigned, to get a staff permanently assigned to Station Cape Disappointment. And really, it's, you know, history from that point on was that the school would take students from around the country, and as well as internationally. In fact, one of the courses that we teach now is an international motor lifeboat course. So for 2 weeks, we bring in students from the Mexican Coast Guard. We sometimes have Canadian Coast Guard. We've had the Royal National Lifeboat Institute from Great Britain. We've had students from there. And so national, still is a national school, but you could almost call us an international school at this point, because we do you know, reach out into the maritime domain and bring students in from around the world now.
I'm kind of curious, how many motor lifeboats are actually out there working?
I can't give you the exact number now, because we're in the process of transitioning from, at some stations, transitioning from the 47-foot motor lifeboat to the response boat medium, which is has a little bit less capability as far as heavy weather goes, but is a little bit more or better suited to do the mission at some of these stations. And a lot of these stations are down in Florida, Texas, Southern California, the southern part of the Eastern Seaboard. Some of those stations are getting rid of their 47s. I think at one time there was around, I want to say around 112, 114, oh, yeah, motor lifeboats in operation. But that that number, as I said, is starting to change. We're starting to lose some of them.
But I'm just wondering, of all the stations where these boats work, the fact that you train here kind of tells me that the conditions here are pretty rugged.
This is, like I said before, the Columbia River estuary and the mouth and actual bar here provide us with a broad spectrum of conditions. We, you can be, and most of your listeners that fish on the Columbia River bar probably know this, that conditions can change really in a matter of minutes on the bar, depending on what the state of the tide is and all of that. So between the weather systems that we have coming in on the coast here, the large volume of water that's leaving the river, all of those combine at the mouth of the river to really create the ideal heavy weather training environment. So we can work on clatsop spit, for instance, in 12 to 14 foot surf, leave clatsop spit and go on the north side of the red buoy line and end up in 8 to 10 foot swells, you know, if we're not quite prepared for the students to go in there, or move further up river, off of Desdemona Sands, in the vicinity of McGowan Spire, that area over there. And in fact, yesterday we were out there with these students, conditions weren't quite as large as you would see over in clatsop spit. But that's what we wanted. We wanted to give them a chance to get more familiar with the boat and, not challenge them too much to the point that they're not learning anymore. They're just trying to survive on the helm. This is a great training environment. We've got beach surf on Benson Beach and the beach south of the South Jetty. Clatsop spit provides great conditions, and then in some cases, even peacock spit. But we're very, very cautious about operating over there. So it's a great area to train in, and that's why the school's here.
I just take a minute to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. Engineer is Terry Wilson. And I'm really happy to be speaking today with United States Coast Guard Captain Clark, who is the commander at the Motor Lifeboat School over at Cape D. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, Kevin, tell me a little bit about the people that you have working with you at the Motor Lifeboat School.
Well, we have, as I mentioned before, the instructor staff.
How many?
We've got right now 8 surfman instructors and 3 engineering instructors that work in the engineering staff, or correction, in the instructor staff. So we have an instructor staff, and then I have an administrative staff that helps take care of the unit needs as far as administrative items go.
You mean like paperwork?
Paperwork, yeah. So, and we couldn't do it without them. I mean, they play a very important role, not only taking care of the unit, but also taking care of the students when they come in, making sure that their needs are met as far as their orders are being processed, lodging, all of those things. And then we have a maintenance staff, and the maintenance staff is crucial to keeping the boats operating within their parameters, keeping them up and running so that we can get these students out on the water. We're pretty short-handed right now. We're going through a transfer season, so normally we have a staff of about 55. Right now we're down to around 28, between 28 and 30. So got a lot of people that have transferred out. We'll be getting some new folks in, and of course that'll require us to get them trained and ready to go out and do the job. So pretty decent sized staff with a pretty broad spectrum of familiarity with the boat. So we'll get some new folks in here that have never even seen a 47 footer before, and we're going to require them to learn that platform, to maintain the platform, and then to eventually act as a crew member on board the platform when we're out doing training.
So you mentioned the engineers. Kind of fill that out a little bit for me. They take care of the boat, kind of?
That's correct. There are several different levels of certification that you can acquire on the 47-foot motor lifeboat, the first of which is motor lifeboat crewman. And these are the folks that actually work the decks for us, handle lines for tows. They're the young men and women that you know, put themselves down in the recess port or one of the low spots along the side of the boat and recover people from the water. They're the eyes and ears of the coxswain or surfman, and so they play a very, very vital role. That's the lowest level of certification. Then you have the engineer on the boat, and they're in charge or in control of what goes on down in that engine room. They make sure that the boat's operating within its parameters and that it's capable of doing what it needs to do as far as, you know, executing the mission. And then you have three different levels of boat operator. You have a coxswain, which is the basic level of Coast Guard boat operator. You have a heavy weather coxswain, which is trained to a higher level. They're able to take the boat out in more extreme conditions than the coxswain would. And then you have a surfman, and a surfman is the highest level of certification in the Coast Guard. And all of our operating or boat operator instructors at the lifeboat school or surfmen. So we have right now, I think between the maintenance staff and the instructor staff, we've got just about every level of certification that you can find at a motor lifeboat station.
How many of those are women?
Right now, I'm still getting familiar with the crew, but I've got most of the females that we have on board right now are in the maintenance division, but they're certified as crew members. So they're out there with the guys, you know, hauling in tow line, throwing heaving lines, doing all the stuff that is expected of a Coast Guard crew member.
And they represent kind of a rough percentage of your crew?
About 10% of the crew, right as it stands right now,
right.
With, you know, the transition we're going through the transfer cycle.
You know, one of the things that I'm curious about, the weather really impacts what you guys do. Do you have, how do you get the weather, and how do you keep updated on it? It changes so rapidly out here.
Well, just like I think most of your listeners do, we listen to the radio. So, you know, obviously. And then we're checking the National Weather Service. We actually get message traffic or, for lack of a better term, if you want to put it in the context of an email system, that we get weather notifications you know, every 6 to 8 hours. And then with iPhones and all of that now, you know, a Coast Guard motor lifeboat operator, a coxswain, heavy weather coxswain or surfman, can take his phone out, and in a matter of a few seconds, he knows or she knows what conditions are headed their way. So there's a variety of different ways to do it. I myself like using the National Weather Service. I don't know if I can plug Weather Underground, but that's one of the other available resources that we use. And then we look at historical weather data,
mm-hmm.
To help us determine when we're going to put these types of classes on, so we can go back and look at archived weather information from years ago to help us determine when it's best to put on a heavy weather course or the surfman course.
Do you interface very often with the Columbia River bar pilots?
Really, the extent that we interface with them is going to be basically staying out of their way.
Uh-huh.
When we're conducting training on the bar, say, for instance, tows, heavy weather tows, and we've got a deep draft commercial vessel coming in, we try to make sure that they know that we're going to get out of their way before they get the point where there might be a risk of collision or anything like that. But that's really the extent of our interface with the Columbia River bar pilots.
Well, it sounds to me like you've got I'm still kind of on the weather issue here, but it sounds like you get feedback from some of your own people who happen to be out there, and that goes into your facility somewhere, and then perhaps reports from the bar pilots. Is there some facility that you've got that correlates all of that information so that you have 100%?
Well, we have a small weather station,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah,
just a remote weather station that we have mounted on a tower next to, very near the school itself. Mm-hmm. So we use that, but we also rely pretty heavily on the Coast Guard Station Cape Disappointment personnel. Right. They send a bar boat out every morning at first light to get a bar report and actually get eyes on conditions on scene, so yeah. they know what they're dealing with, and we use that information to help us decide what it is we're going to do during our training day.
Well, Terry, what are you doing over there?
Well, I'm not even on a microphone yet.
We are having a pledge drive for our
KCPB.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, if they our sister station on the other side of the hallway, where we always do a pledge drive in time for the Astoria Music Festival, and I think we started Monday. And just like the pledge drives here, we have to support that station. And you can, if you like classical music or you like the news, that's the place to turn during the day. And you can do it very easily. 503-325-0010 or 1-800-518-0010. Call up and give a pledge or maintain your membership, become a new member.
Thank you, Terry. Remind our listeners, in between the pledge drive, we're visiting with Kevin Clark. And we're just kind of getting toward the end of the program here, Kevin. You had a couple of issues there that you had made notes. What do you got?
I just wanted to, you know, a few things here wanted to make sure I covered for you, just some reminders for me. And I think we've hit just about everything as far as the you know, the curriculum there at the National Motor Lifeboat School and the types of courses that we teach. We've talked about the staff. I've got a great group of people there that are very dedicated to what it is that we do. And you know, I'm looking forward, as I told you before, this is my last assignment in the Coast Guard. Pretty excited about the next 3 years and getting to work with these great people. I'm pretty passionate about what we do there. I think it's an important job. While we don't get to go out and actually conduct search and rescue operations like Station Cape Disappointment or the other Coast Guard stations up and down the Oregon and Washington coast or, you know, around the country, what we do, I think, impacts that pretty significantly in that we are able to train the young Coast Guard coxswains that are, you know, coming up through the ranks that are going to be serving around the country to do, you know, a very challenging job. So while we don't get to actually get hands on that hand that's reaching up out of the water to be saved, the folks that we train are going out there and doing that mission, and we're all very proud of the fact that we get to at least have some chance to make a contribution to that effort.
And you share the facility with Station Cape D, but you have a separate office and stuff?
That's correct. And, you know, I'll invite you, Jim, if you ever want to come over and, you know, take a look at our facility and see how we're set up. But we are indeed a tenant command of Coast Guard Station Cape Disappointment. The school actually works for the Coast Guard's training center out of Yorktown, Virginia. That's my boss. So we're co-located, but we're really two separate commands. The Cape Disappointment Coast Guard Station and their commanding officer there does a great job supporting us and helping us do what we need to do as well.
Now, do you guys work, just real quickly, do you guys work like a 40-hour week, or how's your schedule set up?
It's kind of different. I mean, really, everything that we do when a class is in session is dictated by the weather. So we stay very flexible. We take a look at the bar. We listen to the bar report that the station provides every morning. We may go up to the lighthouse there at Cape Disappointment in the morning to see what the conditions actually look like on the bar. So when we don't have class in, we're pretty much a 9-to-5. When we have a class in, it's whatever the class needs. If we need to be there late, we're there late. We need to come in early. We need to work weekends. We do what we have to do to make sure that the students get what they need and that we get that class graduated.
Well, Kevin Clark, commanding officer at the United States Coast Guard Motor Lifeboat School, I really appreciate you coming in and talking with it. It's been fascinating, and as we told you, It goes by really quick.
It does. Now, thank you for having me, Jim.
You know, in just a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds, you could. What would you talk to a high school or college student about the advantages of a Coast Guard career?
Well, it is a very rewarding career, and in fact, Coast Guard right now has a pretty robust initiative in place to try to get new recruits in. I actually have a nephew that is going to boot camp in August, but the numbers are down. We're trying to build some of those numbers back up, so there's a wide variety of different types of jobs that you can get in the Coast Guard. I guess I would encourage any high school senior that's interested in a career in the Coast Guard to get with a Coast Guard recruiter and, pursue that dream.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Clark, thanks a lot for being with us here at Coast Community Radio. It's time to wrap this show up. Next week, we'll be visiting with the interim director from the Port of Astoria, which should be pretty exciting. Thanks a lot for listening, folks.
You've been listening to Friday with Jim, hosted by Coast Community Radio Jim Wilkins. Fridays with Jim is heard on Coast Community Radio every Friday morning at 9:30. You can download a podcast of this program on the demand service on the web at coastradio.org. Just click on Fridays with Jim on the homepage.